This is Scott Bergwin of the Stand Independent News Service, and we are talking on the line with Mel Duncan, the Executive Director of Nonviolent Peace Force, and also Rita Webb, who's a field personnel who spent 3 years in Sri Lanka and will be going back. And I would like to say a few things about Nonviolent Peace Force to get us started here from their website at nvpf.org. That's nvpf.org. It says, Nonviolent Peace Force is a federation of over 90 member organizations from around the world. In partnership with local groups, unarmed Nonviolent Peace Force field team members apply proven strategies to protect human rights, deter violence, and help create space for local peacemakers to carry out their work. The mission of the Nonviolent Peace Force is to build a trained international civilian peace force committed to third-party nonviolent intervention. Excuse me, and welcome Mel and Rita. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Good to be here, Scott.
So, Rita, I assume then you have been a Nonviolent Peace Force field team member, is that right, in Sri Lanka?
That's correct. I did my initial core training in Thailand in the summer of 2003, and then a group of 11 of us were deployed to Sri Lanka in the fall of 2003, where I've been since.
Okay, and I understand you'll be going back, and I'd like to get back to that, your experience in Sri Lanka and what you're looking forward to in going back. But let's turn to Mel first here. And Mel is the executive director. And can you tell us a little bit about, I think maybe a little background history of this organization? This is quite an amazing undertaking, and you've been about at it for quite some time now and have built up quite a bit of expertise and prestige, I think, as well as hopefully some successes. So would you mind just sharing with listeners how Nonviolent Peace Force got started and where you're at now? And I know that's a big chunk, but I know you can handle it.
Okay, I'll do my best, Scott. Nonviolent Peace Force began in May of 1999 when a group of us came together at a conference in The Hague to challenge each other as to whether this was the time and the place in history to increase the scale and the scope and the professionalism and the international nature of civilian unarmed peacekeeping. We build this on a very strong legacy that goes back, for example, to Gandhi, who was creating the Shanti Sena, which is Sanskrit for peace army. And he was actually working on that when he was assassinated. And during the 1980s and 1990s, there were several examples of unarmed peacekeeping in various parts of the world, from Nicaragua and Guatemala to South Africa to the Philippines. And in 1999, we came together and believed that we could learn from those lessons that had already been established in the field and really take unarmed peacekeeping to a new level of both practice and success. So then we went through a phase of research and did a feasibility study that documents best practices and where and when nonviolent peacekeeping works. And that is available on our website, which is nonviolentpeaceforce.org. We also spent time living and working and talking with people in some of the most violent places on the planet. And time and time again, we heard from people that, first of all, that they were doing effective peacemaking and peacebuilding work, and that very courageously and creatively, and that the presence of internationals with them would extend their life and allow them to do their work more effectively and in a for a longer term. And we found that cross-culturally. We also found that more often than not, this work was being carried out by women. And what those women told us was that if there is an international presence with us, we are much more likely to stay alive and not be disappeared. So at the same time we were doing that, we found that there were a lot of people who recognized that the time to do this was now. And so we had a number of organizations, now 94, who joined with us for the express purpose of creating a nonviolent peace force. So those, we all came together for the first time at the end of 2002 and officially began Nonviolent Peace Force and chose Sri Lanka as the site of our first peacekeeping project.
All right. Well, a question that comes up for me immediately is, you did mention international folks, and I'm assuming that because international people are there, that would potentially and hopefully increase the attention on the area around the world. That would help then the locals. They wouldn't be operating in total anonymity. Is that correct? Is that what people were saying?
Yes. It really increases the stakes of what happens, that incidents are no longer just local affairs, but are international incidents. And so our teams provide the eyes and the ears and at times the voice for the international community. So our team in Sri Lanka comes from 18 different countries. And one of their sources of their ability to protect is that they are indeed internationals. Now, there's other reasons that they're able to protect, but that international nature is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is obviously a tall order, and could you describe something about your recruitment process and recruiting people like Rita to be the field team members? Because obviously these are some, you're looking for some pretty outstanding, committed people to be able to take on this, what must seem like sometimes a monumental task. Certainly it seems like a monumental task to somebody from the outside looking at a violent situation and saying, you're going to do what?
You know, one of the most hopeful things about our work is the number of people who are coming forward and wanting to be peacekeepers with Nonviolent Peace Force.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the last team that we recruited, which went to the field in August, we had 18 positions available, and we had over 10 applicants for each position.
Mm.
And those 10 applicants came from 55 countries. And we find that over and over again, as you described, Scott, this is not easy work. It is demanding. It requires a tremendous amount of courage. The commitment is for 2 years. And we have many more people who want to do this than we currently can deploy. And that's one of the hopeful things that is out there on the horizon in this time that can seem so dismal and so awash in violence, that there are so many of us that are willing to put our lives on the line.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could turn to Rita then. Rita, what specifically drew you to this, to making this kind of incredible, really, in my mind, incredible commitment that took you to Sri Lanka for, well, what, 3 years so far, and you are going back.
Right.
What brought you to this?
Well, I am a grandmother from Wisconsin. And
the heartland.
The heartland. And I had spent my life trying to participate in peace work and peace activities around, as most people do, around the world, around work, around family, around relationships, and so on. And I knew that I really, at some point, wanted to be in a position to find a way to do peace work full-time and not just in my so-called free time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched the development of the Nonviolent Peace Force from its earliest conversations, because I happened to live in the same area where Mel and others were having these conversations. And I was amazed at the speed with which they were able to actually turn this vision, this dream, into a reality that I'm fortunate now to be able to participate in Sri Lanka. So it has been clear to me that politicians and our military leaders are not up to the task of solving violent conflicts, and that that history that we have of turning to violent methods to solve our problems, mm-hmm. and that it really was going to require the participation and creativity of civilians to take a, more of a lead and a part in that. So this opportunity was one that I had been waiting for a very long time, and it has, you know, proved to be. I've had many satisfying jobs in my life. This one is probably the hardest one I've ever had, but also so satisfying on so many levels.
So, on a more personal note, what has been the response of your family? I mean, has there been a mixed response? There's some of them wondering if you've lost your marbles, or
yes, it was in fact very mixed at the beginning, except for my husband, who was supportive from the beginning. Mm. I made my 2-year commitment with the reserved blessing of our 3 children, and with the clear message that as long as we weren't both doing such a foolish thing, that they could live with it for 2 years. But as it turned out, after a year and a half into my service, my husband came to Sri Lanka for a visit, and it was at that juncture that it became, I think, first clear to him and then clear to me that I really was not feeling finished in what then would have been another 6 months, and he suggested that it seemed to him from the people he was meeting and the work that we were doing that that I really, in my heart, wanted to continue to do it. And he said that if that's what I wanted to do, that he would join me, which he did a year and a half ago. So we are now both living in the east of Sri Lanka in what is currently a conflict area of the country, and he is able to support both me and Nonviolent Peace Force in a number of ways as being someone that is also living this life of a civilian peacekeeper trying to contribute to other civilians that want to build a world beyond war.
Okay, well, this obviously makes it obvious that there's not just the commitment of the field team members, but there's commitment of a whole lot of other people in support in that make this possible. That's not a question, obviously. So you've been in Sri Lanka in a time that's not only seen the continuing conflict, and I think it's been ebbing and flowing between the government and the Tamil Tigers, if I remember right, but also the tsunami and the havoc that wreaked on that country as well as other places. Do I remember right, did Nonviolent Peace Force lose some staff members in that?
We did not. We had a couple of injuries, but we were fortunate that none of our offices were actually within that buffer zone that the tsunami hit along about 2/3 of the Sri Lanka coastline. Those injuries, fortunately, were not fatal, and the people have since recovered from them.
Okay, well, that's very good to hear, of course. Next question I have, I wonder, in your situation, and perhaps, Mel, you can comment on this as well, because I know, obviously, Nonviolent Peace Force is in other areas as well at this point. It must be, I would guess, maybe it's just for myself, it would be tough to, I'm guessing that you have to walk the line between not taking sides on either side of a conflict because you're there as kind of a mediation force in a sense. One, is that correct? And also how, that must be difficult, and how do you do that?
Well, you're right, Scott, in that we are nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
It really is not our business, or the business of outsiders, to choose sides. Our job is to be there and to help create and protect the space for local peacemakers, for local human rights defenders, really to do their work and to be able to stay alive in the process. And so we don't go in saying we've forth, this side or that side. And I think that that provides us with a certain degree of credibility and maneuverability mm-hmm. as well,
right.
So that we can do our work and be there supporting the process and the local people in making peace.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume even... Oh, sorry, Rita, go ahead.
I was just going to say, some people talk rather than terms of nonpartisanship, but as really being multi-partial, partial to all sides that are similarly interested in finding nonviolent solutions to mm-hmm. conflict. So while we don't favor one side or the other, we do choose to work only with those people who have a similar commitment to peace with justice through nonviolent means.
Okay, and you are working as a team, right? So it's you and others as well who are in fairly constant contact. Is that correct?
Yes, we are divided currently into 5 field team sites.
Mm-hmm.
And my site is in the east of the country in a small town called Vallachene. And on my team, there are 5 of us from 5 different countries. So we are working there with the various stakeholders in our area who are working at different in different ways on different issues, all with the intent of opening up space for democracy to really flourish in that conflict environment.
Right. Well, to follow up on my earlier kind of question, I can see how, and you can tell me if it's difficult or perhaps the mission is so clear that it helps this not be so difficult, but I can imagine various sides of different issues trying to make you partisan, trying to get you to stand with them, take a side with them in a conflict like that. And is that correct, or is that...
Yes, it can be difficult, particularly in some cases where we are in dialogue and in conversation, for example, with the security forces.
Mm-hmm.
In Sri Lanka, that means the majority population. And to that extent, we could be perceived as being pro-government,
mm-hmm.
But we also are in dialogue with other parties and other conflicting parties to the conflict, so that we do try to support all sides when they are trying to reach out to each other. The government allows us to be there. So, to that extent, we do serve at the pleasure of the government in terms of getting visas, getting work permits, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, to this point, they have recognized that there is a useful role that international people can play in helping communities solve problems nonviolently.
So. Someone trained in the military may disagree with this statement, but it seems to me that the training to be a nonviolent peace force field team member is perhaps more difficult than being trained as a soldier, because you are trained to the nuances and having to deal with communication and listening and all those things to try to nuance different situations, whereas a soldier comes down to the ultimate, the use of violence as the ultimate answer to a certain problem. So this seems, I'm interested in the training. If I'm sure you could talk forever on all these subjects,
yeah,
but
exactly.
The training that you go through to feel comfortable, or at least comfortable enough, I'm sure there's probably very few times you feel actually totally comfortable, but describe the training if you can, an overview of it, or perhaps.
The training is actually ongoing, especially mm-hmm. in Nonviolent Peace Force in Sri Lanka, as this is our first full-blown project that we've undertaken, but we concentrate on using methods, as Mel said earlier, that have been tried and tested in other parts of the world over a very long period of time, methods that could be grouped under an umbrella term that some people call third-party nonviolent intervention, or TIPNI for short. So we try to increase our own skill and creativity in how we witness human rights and other kinds of issues, how we monitor events in communities, how we accompany people who are experiencing intimidation or threat, how we can use our international stature and presence to provide some modicum of safety for the local people to build their own form of peace and justice according to their historical moment and their historical place. So those are the kinds of things we continually try to be creative around. But like you say, versus a military mindset or an armed response, you know, there's that old saying that if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. So we try to have many tools in our box, none of which would require a hammer, but to allow people the time and the space to come up with their own creative and life-affirming choices around how to live together.
And I imagine almost on a day-to-day basis with your team, there are times when, how would I say it, you know, I've done some nonviolent training a while back and did some nonviolent peacekeeper thing for, you know, small demonstrations, and sometimes I'm on and sometimes I'm not. And you need that sort of criticism, self-criticism, if that's what you want to call it, aspect, so you can, you know, get help in, okay, how could I have done this better?
Yeah, and that's so support on. For each other.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, well, Mel, let's go back to you, and we probably have about 7 minutes left here, and so let's start that 7 minutes with where else. We've got Sri Lanka, of course, and are there other places that the Nonviolent Peace Force is involved right now and or considering moving into?
We are currently recruiting for a peacekeeping project in Mindanao, which is in the southern Philippines, and we would hope to start training that group in mid-November. Our governing council, which is made up of representatives of the 94 member organizations, is presently considering a proposal for Colombia and also a proposal for northern Uganda and southern Sudan. In addition to that, a new project that we're starting is on training a pool of well-trained peacekeepers who are at the ready and available either for nonviolent peace force projects, for emergencies that would come up in the world, or if organizations like the UN High Commission on Refugees would say, we need 10 peacekeepers to go here to Lebanon right now. And so we have trained trainers who are now doing trainings around the world for to develop peacekeepers who will then be at the ready. And so our next training for that is in Nairobi, Kenya in mid-November. And so I should say, if people are interested in being considered as a volunteer, or not volunteer, as our peacekeepers are paid rather modestly, but they do receive a stipend plus living expenses, they can contact us via our website, nonviolentpeaceforce.org.
Okay. Well, that's it's incredibly ambitious, but I also must say that listening to you, looking at your website, and then what I've known, you know, picked up before this, you have a very measured approach also. You're not obviously just, let's get out there and do whatever we can everywhere. You are very, I guess the word would be controlled, under control.
Well, you know, we are cautious.
Mm-hmm.
We are not doing this to make ourselves martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing this because this is an effective way of peacekeeping and more effective than the military ways that have been attempted,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to develop this and make this available to the people of the world. Because in the end, we believe that it's civilians, people like Rita and you and me, who have the responsibility to step forward and provide support and protection to our fellow civilians throughout the world.
How would a person know, let's say that a person hears this and they're going, I'm really interested in that. Are there certain things, questions right off the bat, you would want them to ask themselves to determine whether they are, this is something that's, you know, they're, it would be good for them to do?
Well, are they willing to commit 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
We also look very carefully for people who have cross-cultural mm-hmm. experience and lots of problem-solving work within teams, people who have had experience either in doing nonviolent work and or also facing risky situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because it's not always the nonviolent protest workers who are necessarily the best candidates.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more important that we have people who can work together as a team, can do problem solving, can live in challenging situations for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And Rita, what else would you add to that?
Sense of humor.
Yeah.
That helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really, I think, like all of us, we don't really know what our limits are until we begin pushing them.
Mm-hmm.
The core training and the assessment process that we go through is really, it's a mutual assessment. It's a time for candidates to assess themselves, more so even than for the organization to assess them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does become clear when you go through our assessment and initial training process that whether or not this is something that you think is a good fit for you, is something that you can commit to, and is going to allow you to be in a position to really contribute to the work of the team and to the communities that we serve. So we allow people to have that kind of reflection opportunity, and then we've just maybe been lucky to identify so many good people, and as Mel said, so many more out there who really do understand that it's up to the civilians to lead the leaders of the world in the direction that we all want to go, which is a world where we can all peacefully coexist most of the time.
Thank you, Rita. Well said. And we have about 30 seconds. Is there anything either of you want to add here at the end?
Yes. There are many ways that people can get involved. They can volunteer, and they can do that again through our website. They can also donate money, because it is we as civilians, as individuals, who can make this happen. And there are many of us who are able to donate $10 a week, some of us $10 a month, some of us $100 a month, and that every dollar counts in terms of making sure that we can provide more and more peacekeepers to more violent situations in the world, because we've demonstrated that the people are there, the people who are willing to step forward and be trained. And God knows that the conflicts are there, and people recognize that unarmed peacekeeping is is needed. And we've demonstrated that we have the structure to train, assess, recruit, and support people in doing this work. And so the only resource left that we need really is money. Mm-hmm. And that's going to come from you and me and the listeners today. So again, visit our website at nonviolentpeaceforce.org.
Okay, well, thank you, Mel and Rita. Best of luck to you, Rita, in returning to Sri Lanka. And
thank you so much.
Thank you both for your work in for peace and nonviolence.
I was talking to Mel Duncan, Executive Director of Nonviolent Peace Force, and Rita Webb, Peace Force team field team member who's spent 3 years in Sri Lanka and is going back. You can get more information on Nonviolent Peace Force at their website, nonviolentpeaceforce.org. That's nonviolentpeaceforce.org. One word, .org. You've been listening to the Stand Independent News Service. I'm Scott Berguin. We'll talk to you next time.